The forum topic tonight is this a Kairos moment? Do we need a confessing church today? There are a couple of words there, one word and one phrase, that need some explication. Kairos and confessing church. And part of the function of the three of us up here is to do a little of that. But the primary purpose of this evening is to engage in a discussion together. Forums at Holden are times when we can talk freely on what oftentimes are controversial issues, and where that can be done with a whole lot of folks, and so the participation of all of you is welcome. While the regular sessions often have people up front taking half of the hour or even more, the proportion changes here. I'm going to say something about that term, the confessing church. Barbara Rossing and Jack Nelson Pohlmeier are going to each take on the word Kairos and make an argument that there is, this is, or this is not a Kairos moment. After that has been done, then the floor is open for you. The reference to the confessing church in this title is a reference to the opposition church in Germany during the Nazi regime that was established with a declaration at a little town in Germany called Barmen in 1934. When Hitler came on the scene in 1933, the church, now I'm speaking about the Protestant church, split in three different directions within a matter of a couple of years. One part of the church said, the Lutheran church said, we want to remain neutral. That is, the church has its set of responsibilities, the state has its set of responsibilities, and we and the church will remain neutral in matters of politics. Another part of the church, called the Deutsche Christen, the German Christians, saw in Nazism in the early 30s a way of life which was compatible, a German way of life which was compatible with Christian faith. And they became supporters of Hitler and the Nazi regime and enacted a series of church laws, as well as did a whole lot of preaching and education supportive of Nazism, the Deutsche Christen, the German Christians. The third sector of the Lutheran Church opposed the rise of Nazism, and first was a confessing movement. That is, it was present here and there within the church at large, and stated its opposition to Hitler and Nazism. However, the intensity heightened, and in 1934 it changed from a confessing movement to a confessing church. That means it said, we are now splitting from the state church, and we are establishing a set of alternative institutions. We will have our own seminaries. We will collect our own monies for the support of pastors, for our education, worship needs, etc. And congregations had to make a decision. Would they join the confessing church? Would they remain with the largest group, which was the neutrals? Or would they, at that time, be with the Deutsche Christen, which was actually a movement but with state sponsorship? So the reference to confessing church, then, is a reference to a church which says, in opposition to a major pervasive issue of the day, here we stand, we can do no other, we stand in full opposition to this. This is a case of status confessionis, where the gospel is at stake, and we say no to, in this case, Nazism. The question has been raised whether there are other issues which demand that the church say no in that way, and if necessary, split from its establishment connections. Okay, that's the reference to the confessing church. Now, do you want to say something about Kairos?
Maybe Jack should go first.
Jack, you want to say something about Kairos?
Sure, I would be glad to.
Good.
I'll hold up a couple things. Maybe you pass me over the Damascus Road one too. Kairos is a term that, unless you know Greek, it probably doesn't mean much to you, and I don't know Greek, and it didn't mean much to me. But translated, Kairos means time of decision or moment of truth. And my understanding is that the New Testament has a number of words for time. One is more chronological time, and the other is decisive time. And so when people or groups talk about Kairos, they talk about that it's a decisive time. It's a moment of truth. And there's three documents that have emerged out of different settings. One of them is from South Africa. It was called Challenge to the Church, which was called the Kairos Document. And essentially what this document does is it critiques the theologies that are operating within South Africa. And it names three. One it called state theology. And it said state theology is essentially a theology in the churches that embraces apartheid. It embraces the evil system of apartheid. It provides a theological justification for it. A second theology that it critiqued was something called church theology. And church theology sounds a lot like our best theology when they critique it. It critiques things like the church's commitment to reconciliation, to nonviolence, to peace. And I say to myself, boy, those are words I'm real committed to and concepts I'm real committed to. But they critique the church's actions in relation to statements of commitment about, yeah, we're for peace. But they say that the actions don't follow. So they provide a theological critique of a theology they call church theology, which in my view really resembles much of some of the better theology that's operating in our churches. And then they say, in the moment of crisis, which is South Africa, they call the churches to a prophetic theology, a theology that gets lived out in action. And the dividing line that they say makes it a Kairos time is they say that Christianity is incompatible, or apartheid is incompatible with Christianity. And they basically say in this document, they call it a Kairos time and say it's a breaking point, it's a moment of truth, that you cannot be a practicing Christian and not resist apartheid. So that's one context, and I'll be briefer in the other two. A second context was that, I'm going in chronological order now, was a document that came out of Central America, and they called it Kairos Central America, Moment of Truth. And there, they looked in some ways, that if any of you have sat in on any of my sessions, the political and social context is what I've been talking about in my conversations. Incredible inequality, structural inequality, oppression of the poor, persecution of the church. My topic today was, why do U.S.-backed governments kill priests? And they talk about the church is under siege. And again, they use the term Kairos to describe this. A third document that's a more recent one came out of Christians from seven different third world or two-thirds world countries reflecting upon their common situation as people of faith living in the context of the two-thirds world. And they put together a document called The Road to Damascus, Kairos and Conversion. So just to say, you can pass that back to Barbara. Mm-hmm. That's just to give a little bit of background that Kairos simply means it's a moment of truth. And I want to read one paragraph and then make a couple of observations, and then I'll be done with at least my beginning part. This is a paragraph from a document that the faith community that I'm a part of, called the Community of St. Martin in Minneapolis, is we were wrestling with this question of Kairos. Just one paragraph from a self-reflection as we thought about what does Kairos mean for us. And we said, in a certain sense, Christians by definition are always a confessing people, and each day is a Kairos time in which decisions must be made. In a way, Jesus presented the people with a Kairos time. He presented people with moments of truth, with times of decision. And that should be ongoing for us. However, there's a special need for confession and a more urgent sense of Kairos when Christians, faith communities, and churches ignore, tolerate, embrace, or inadequately respond to radical sin or evil. And here's a very important phrase for me in trying to understand Kairos. It says, radical injustice does not in itself create the need for confession. It is our failure to confront injustice as Christians that points to our need for confession and spiritual renewal. So to bring this, you know, my little introductory piece here to a close, it seems to me, we heard in Larry's talk tonight, the earth is dying. The way that we phrase this, as we were thinking about it as a community, is we are at war against future generations by virtue of the patterns of production and consumption that we have. Some people have suggested that the world economy and the fact that 40 million people die from hunger or hunger-related causes due to structural inequalities in the world economy is itself a confessional issue, or would point to a Kairos time. I have pointed in my own work, and again, some of you have sat in on my sessions, and you'll understand the urgency I feel about this, that the sinister and cynical warfare strategy that the United States has devised to intervene in third world settings is another one of those political and social issues that just, it's like a slap in the face. The earth is dying. And there's some others that we can name. But the point I want to get back to, what leads me to the conclusion that yes, this is a moment of truth, is not just the urgency of those issues. There have been urgent issues throughout history. Maybe we could argue they're more urgent now because we've got 40 years left, or they're more urgent now because nuclear capacity could blow everything up. But that's not what leads me there. What leads me there is a sense of the moving of the Spirit, which is another way of thinking about Kairos, is that it's an opportunity in which God's Spirit is moving us, directing us, calling us forth. And part of what makes it, what I think defines the Kairos time for me, is the incredible complicity of people of faith. Silence, participation, wanting to be neutral, or wanting to stand back, for me just points to an enormous crisis of faith in this country. The convergence between patriotism and faith, which is so prevalent in this country, all of those things go beyond the radicality of the social concerns that we might have. So the Kairos is a word spoken to the church. It's the Spirit trying to move God's church. And I see it. I feel that happening in some ways, and I feel it as a desperate need. There's no, last comment, there's no way that I see that we will save ourselves and the earth in this 40 years that's coming. There's no way that I see that we will respond to issues of hunger, that we will say no to this war against the poor, without a radical transformation and conversion of people of faith in our churches and synagogues. So that's how I would lay out Kairos.
Thank you, Jerry. Barbara.
Well, I think I was the closest that Dan could find to an opposition figure here or whatever, and I'm not exactly an opposition figure, but just a different tack here. And that is to say, I would agree with Jack that this is a Kairos time. Now is a Kairos time. But I guess I think I would tend to agree more with the first sentence that you read in that document, that in a sense, only I'd say in a big sense, every moment for every person of faith and every community of faith is a Kairos time. And I'm not sure, that isn't to say that this moment right now is less of a Kairos. It's just to say that that's what God's people are always called to see themselves as in, is a Kairos moment. I want to just do a little bit about the New Testament. You're right that it's a Greek word for time that's different from Chronos, although I think it's not as sharp a distinction as we sometimes make. I mean, there are times that Kairos is used and it just means like 7 o'clock, or, you know, I mean, it's just this Kairos, that, it, or it could be a place or a length of time or something like that. But I think you're right, especially in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus uses it as a moment of decision. I just thought I'd read one of the passages here. Jesus said to the multitudes, "When you see a cloud rising in the west, you say at once, 'A shower is coming,' and it happens. When you see the south wind blowing, you say, 'There will be scorching heat,' and it happens. You hypocrites, you know how to interpret the appearance of earth and sky, but why do you not know how to interpret the present time?" And that's Kairos. Why don't you know how to interpret the Kairos? So there's a big challenge in the Gospel of Luke to see the Kairos that is dawning in Jesus' time. When Jesus weeps over Jerusalem in chapter 19, he's weeping because you did not know the Kairos, because you did not know the time of your visitation. So there's a sense in Luke, especially, that time and the Kairos are upon us, and the tragedy is when we don't recognize it. Some of the other books, though, use it in a different kind of way, for example, to mean the last judgment, in sort of a less political way, I think. And so I know I'm in danger here of seeming like those people in Luke 19 over whom Jesus wept because they didn't recognize the Kairos, but I guess I'm not yet convinced. I do think the present time is a Kairos, but I think every moment is a Kairos for every person, every Christian, a moment of decision like that. And I certainly, in reading the South African Kairos document, I certainly agree that in South Africa there's the great divide that the document so brilliantly lays out. The church theology is complicit in the apartheid regime, and I think it's very clear in that South African situation that a Kairos means having to say yes and no, and that it's going to be a time of division in the church, and is indeed that. I'm less clear how it is in our own situation. I guess I'm not as negative on the church. I mean, I think the church needs to repent of complicity, but I'm not sure that we're at that kind of divide in our own church in America. I'll just end by saying I think this is a Kairos time, but I'm not sure it's more of a Kairos time than last year was.
It might help to make a distinction between Kairos time and confessing church.
There's two issues there, yeah. Because I'm not sure what, that it's time for us to split from the church. Right. Maybe that's it. This is a Kairos time, but I don't know that we're called to split.
Right. Well, let's put this as the question then to start the discussion. Is this a Kairos moment that calls for a specific confessional movement on the part of people of faith? I'd like to just put that out as a question. It has a couple of questions which go along with it. If so, on what issues or facing what reality? What would bring you, in your judgment, to the conclusion this is such a time? Or conversely, why? What would you say along the lines of Barbara that it isn't a time for a specific decision, a yes and no divide in the church around any particular issue. So
well,
is
maybe
this,
can I just say, Larry, though, I think you made the distinction in your opening remarks between a confessing movement and a confessing church. I guess I'd be willing to say it's time for a confessing movement in the church, and that's all of us. I'm not sure that when you said they finally had to split, I'm not sure that we're at that point.
Maybe. Let's start with the former.
The confessing movement.
Let's ask if this is a Kairos moment that calls for a confessing movement on the part of the church. If so, because of what, in the face of what, etc.
Jan? More question of clarification, if I might. Is St. Martin prepared to begin a confessing church movement, or are they going to keep in their confessing movement?
I'll just say, I think there is the seeds of a confessing movement is sprouting, not just in St. Martin's, but all over the country. I don't know if it's going to stop, if it's going to grow, if it's going to wither. But I can say more about that at some point. But in 1992 is kind of a key year that when the country is going to be celebrating 500 years of colonialism. There are discussions going on in many, many parts of the country from a broad range of groups trying to, and there's a process underway in which people are being encouraged to engage in small group reflections on, you know, is this, looking at the documents from overseas, first of all, but then trying to discern what is it that God is calling of us in these times, and to see where that takes us. So there's no firm decision, but there's lots of things that are happening.
But it is a confessing movement that is in.
Yeah, it's not a confessing church. It's not just one of the background statement. There was a gathering of a lot of I would guess progressive peace church people and others pulled together by Sojourners and Fellowship of Reconciliation, a number of other groups a year ago or so. And the overriding sense of 3 days of discernment of people around that room was that, yes, it is a Kairos time, but there was no one who felt like we had the right to say, we're the true church, and anybody outside of this is the false church. No one felt comfortable about that. Mainly, and this was the most important part of that meeting, because as people were reflecting upon the significance of Kairos, they began to judge their own work. It wasn't, oh, look at those complicit churches out there who don't say anything. It was, look at us as a peace movement. Why are we white? Why do we spend so much time on nuclear war when the dynamics that are being posed by these documents are ones of oppression and liberation? So it became a self-searching kind of thing that I thought was very helpful.
That would mean confessing in two senses, one confessing sins and one confessing that for which you stand.
Right.
Yes, Scott.
It seems to me in most of the calls that I hear for a confessional church today, what most people are referring to is this eschewing of liberation theology from the parameters of Lutheran theology, and a statement that says, we know what the gospel is and others don't. A return to a more limited understanding of the Augsburg Confession and so forth. I mean, as I hear people talking about we need a confessional church today, most of them are talking in those terms.
From the right wing, sort of.
Not from the terms that you're talking about.
No, this is a different meaning, and that's a real reference to a movement as well.
So if we were to talk about the need for it, it seems to me that gets all mixed up with the word a confessing church. And how could we make, it seems to me they're talking about something quite different than what you're talking about.
Yes.
How would we make a distinction between what you're talking about and what they're talking about?
I think that the challenge posed by Kairos is the challenge that I have understood as being the central challenge of the biblical message, and that's the problem of idolatry. And I think in formulations of the problem, they would be very, very different as it got laid out. But I think the key would be, and this is a concern of everyone that I know of who's even asking the question, is this a Kairos time? What people are concerned about is that we don't want to answer that question too quickly. We don't want a group of theologians to write a Kairos USA because it's getting fashionable to write Kairos documents. That we want an active, reflective action process. So I would say what would ultimately distinguish it is one's behavior. And part of what we're asking in this, or what I'm asking and others are asking in this process of discernment that we're encouraging in small groups is for people to reflect upon their own life situations. And that's going to be very different for certain people of color and communities of color than it will be in my primary community, for example. But out of that, reflecting upon what are the actions that are being called of us. And I think that's where the divisions ultimately take place. It's not through words, but it's the conclusions we draw from our verbal confessions and how we enact them. And I would guess it would be a very different agenda flowing out of those groups.
It would seem to me that trying to decide ahead of time whether or not it's a Kairos moment, and based on that decision, figuring out whether or not to act, might not be a good place to start. I think it is time for a confessing church. I think we're in the beginning stages of a new reformation. Maybe that's an easier way to talk about it. It cuts across denominational lines. And it's about the state of creation, the state of the two-thirds world, the state of women, the state of gay and lesbian people, the state of the youth in the United States, the growing New Age and other alternative spiritualities being just drawing people because the bourgeois church is so dead. And the institution, at least as I see what's happening in the evangelical Lutheran church, is all the attention going toward the survival of the institution and being held hostage to conservative elements out of fear that the church might split. And so we won't take a stand on anything, and we won't do anything because the highest goal is the survival of the institution. And the Presbyterians and the Methodists are in similar places. And we see TV evangelism kind of solidifying the right across denominational lines. And the rest of us kind of sitting around trying to save the institutional church in its current denominational forms, discussing 16th century issues.
You
just can't see that the survival of the institution as we know it is the highest value of the church.
But I thought I heard you say, Dan, that you see intimations of the New Reformation or a confessing movement or...
Yeah, so personally that says to me it kind of feels like kind of a Kairos moment, but whether or not it is, I feel a call to action.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that acting in solidarity with the... and in step with the gospel as we understand it is what we're called to do. And that's that's what I'm trying to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, can I ask a question? In the Confessing Church in Germany, did they come to a point, the Confessing Church, of saying, I can't go to the Lord's table with you. You are with the state church, therefore I cannot be breaking bread with you? I mean, was it that much of a split? Which it is in South Africa. I would say that the confessing church there, the critique of, well, certainly having declared apartheid to be a status confessionis issue, I mean, it meant excommunication. It meant that you could not go to the table with that person. And I guess that's what I'm really torn up about in our time now, in our place, if we're ready to say that. But did it mean that in Germany?
I don't know. Hans, do you know? If it ever came to whether a neutral Lutheran confessing church person would take the sacrament together.
I can't give a definite answer.
I don't know the answer to that question. I know Bonhoeffer got in big trouble by writing that outside the confession church there is no salvation.
Because that's my, now Newhouse and those guys at St. Paul, they see a confessing church, the time for one now too, but they're of course on exactly the opposite side from me. They would identify all as different set of issues and say that they're equally as much of a confessing movement, and yet I still want to be able to go to communion with those guys. I'm not to the point yet of saying, I mean, I can say I violently disagree with you. I'll never vote for your candidates. I think you're really barking up the wrong tree. You're nuts. Anything like that. But as far as saying I can't break bread with you, I don't see us as being at that moment.
Mark?
I mean, the parallel between what happened in Germany with the Nazism and what's happening with apartheid in South Africa is there's the Deutsche Christen in Germany, which changed the theology drastically to make an Aryan theology, claim that Jesus was not a Jew, but was Aryan, and a whole variety of things, and they would not break. The German Christians, they considered not to be Christian. So they would not, but the neutrals, they thought the neutrals were wrong, but they would still intercommune. That's the same thing that's happening in South Africa, where the feeling is that the theology that supports apartheid is not Christian. It's just like, generally, if you're at all scrupulous, you will not have Eucharist with a new age that doesn't believe in God or Jesus or whatever, that you would feel that you might have fellowship but not table fellowship with those. And I agree with Barbara, I don't think we're at that position. I'd like to raise another question. I think it's a Kairos moment, but is it a Kairos moment for the church or for our society? And what is the role of the church? I mean, the whole society, the church is not large enough. The whole society has to respond to the problems of the ozone layer and global warming and all the ecological disasters. The whole society needs to, or a very significant part of society has to change its mind if we're going to change our lifestyle in such a way that the rest of the globe can get its fair share of the resources. And probably a very large part of the society is going to have to change its mind before the low-intensity conflict that we're waging in parts of the world gets significantly changed. I have most trouble figuring out that last one. But certainly on the first two, on world hunger and the environment. The question is the confessing church was dealing to a threat within Christianity. Are we dealing with a threat within Christianity? Are we dealing with a threat that to all humanity, in which our call is not so much within the church, although we may regain energy and a sense of purpose from the church, but isn't it our call within the larger community?
Very given an analogy as a response. A friend of mine said to me a few years ago, he said, I know more people who are willing to get arrested than talk to their neighbor. And this is maybe it's not a great analogy, but the analogy I was going to give is, I know more people who are willing to quote unquote try to speak truth to power, meaning be a witness to the idiocy of the U.S. government and its policy in El Salvador, than to raise the faith dimension question of why, in general, the churches are so silent in giving so little leadership overall, particularly at the base.
Well, let me challenge you. Is the church really? I mean, it seems that at least all of the mainline denominations have taken positions. What do you mean the church?
Okay, that's exactly where I'd point to the critique of the church theology in South Africa. It says You make wonderful statements against apartheid. Make wonderful statements. But when it comes down to really taking a stand, taking sides, making it a life and death issue. And the other biblical analogy I would give is that it seems to me that what we're called to be is a leaven within society. I don't want a theocracy. I don't want to establish a religious government. You know, I don't want that to be the same. And I think a lot of the fundamentalist churches, they want to establish a theocracy. That's part of their faith creed, and Jesus will come back after 1,000 years of theocratic rule. I don't want that. And I don't think that's what we're called to be. In a diverse society, it seems to me the best that we can be as church and people of faith is a leaven within society. But the only way we can be that is if with integrity, is if we live out our faith with integrity. And I don't see that happening. I see the best and the worst in the churches.
But are you, let one last comment, then let lots of other people. Yeah. But the logic of your position with Barbara's question is that if in your congregation there is a scientist who has doubts about the thesis on global warming, but you would not commune with that person.
No,
that's no longer a Christian position.
No, I've said from the very beginning, I do not feel, and I don't know anybody who's having this conversation about Kairos who feels comfortable in saying, we're going to define a line that we're the true church and you're the false church.
No, but that's what this is. You've set it up that way.
I didn't set it up.
Dan set it up.
So I would answer the question, is it time for a confessing church? I would say no.
I set it up because we had to have Kairos in the title or I wouldn't be on the panel.
you would answer yes if we change church to movement.
Yes. I would say it's time for a confessing church movement.
Confessing movement.
And that grows out of my belief that it's a Kairos time. But I don't think that it's a time to draw a line and say, if you don't feel like I feel about the church's complicity with global warming, I can't commune with you. No, I wouldn't.
Let's take Mark's question, which is the society facing a Kairos moment? And what ought the church's response, participation in the deliberation point of view be on that? Rather than is it a Kairos moment in the churches? Is it a moment of decision for this society that requires urgency of action?
Like against Nazi Germany.
Are you speaking everything or just what topics? Many topics.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the answer to the question is yes, because, and then it's an open question. I'm not asking it with respect to a particular topic. Someone might want to suggest it is because of such a topic or issue area. Dan Geslin said there's a constellation of issues that add up to a kind of Kairos. Yeah, Jan?
Yeah, I'd say yes, if I can. A simple yes or no answer to the question. I guess I felt very frustrated that there are so many issues, this constellation of issues that Dan mentions. But yet, if you boil down most of those issues and get right down to the bottom of them, all of them point to one thing, that we are living a totally unjust lifestyle. So in actual fact, the Central American thing, to some extent the apartheid thing, the community bolstered that because that's a convenient government for us. Certainly the environmental thing are all at the base one thing, that we're living an unjust lifestyle. And to me this Kairos concept may be a way to overcome my incredible frustration about being pulled in about 50 different directions and causes that I feel I need to address, and to be able to begin to address them as all one problem. Me. I'm the problem.
This gentleman was going to respond to.
Where did I guess?
You had raised a question, yeah. And then you were about to speak.
I was just going to say that it's some issues like the Central American issue, which is somewhat controversial in my own mind. I'm not sure I understand all the facts, and I'm not sure all the facts are presented in some of these discussions. The environmental thing, I mean, that is going to affect the world. I mean, there's no question in my mind that as time goes on and population increases, it's going to get more and more critical all the time. Despite the fact that we may try to cut down so long, it's going to get worse and worse.
And is there some urgency of action that goes along with that? I mean, would you call on not only the society at large, but the churches to do some particular thing or to address this in some particular way?
Well, my biggest concern is, frankly, that we can cut down our consumption by 50%, something like that. The population of this country and the world doubles in the next 30, 40 years. It's all for naught. Mm-hmm. And we'll still have the same type of situation we have today. I mean, somebody said, I think today, that you have to have like a $1,200 a year income, something like that, to be equal across the world. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So we've got a real problem coming up. I mean, it's here. The time is here.
So what does that mean in terms of, does that mean that we don't take steps because it's not going to work anyway, so eat, drink, and be merry, or
no,
what does it mean?
No, I say that thing I haven't really seen too much discussion of around here is the population issue, which is absolutely the base issue in the world today. I mean, some of the papers I've seen say, well, how are you going to accommodate a 9 billion population world? That may not even be the answer. I mean, that may not be the question. It may be an 18 million population world. And that is the crucial issue.
Eric, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think the crucial issue is how you live your life today. And I don't know how to speak to other countries, much less the people in my own church, most people, the people in my own city. I know that I live in Chicago now, and when I go down the street and people come up to me and ask me for a dollar. And when I first moved to Chicago, they scared me, and I said no. And it was very easy for me to say no, because I had all the answers. You know, that these people were alcoholics, that they were going to take the money and go buy booze with it, or that these people were lazy and they couldn't get a job. And for about a year, I really never gave any money. And then in studying the Gospels, you know, I just don't see how you can get past the Sermon on the Mount, the teachings in Matthew. How can you be of two minds? How can you know that Christ calls you to clothe and feed your neighbors? And when someone asks you for a dollar, not to give them a dollar. In all these issues, it really does come down to how we live our life today. And there's some things that you can do about world population, but I think that there's so much that you can do just in our own lives. You know, I think that we are incredibly wasteful. Our churches are incredibly wasteful. We can go to a potluck, you know, where there's not just all this, you know, food thrown away, and you know, people driving and. Driving up in a big car by themselves, you know, most of our problems are, we know the answers, we know what to do, but because of, we have other answers why we don't need to do them. I don't know, I'd like to hear from other people.
Yes?
Well, that, just because of that, I think that it is a Kairos moment, and I think the way to reach the majority, well, or a good percentage of the people who will do something is through the church. And I find that I run headlong into a brick wall whenever you try to even get any of our congregation to write their congressman about something, because that's political. So therefore, the church, you know, our church isn't connected with the political, because it's separation of church and state and all that. But I think they have to be educated that we're part of a whole world. And the main emphasis of Christians is, you know, to follow Christ's teaching, and it's for the whole world. And I think that the way to do it is through the church. So we need a confessing movement. I don't like to see any more divisions in churches. I think they need to get them more on a unified basis. And a definite movement of working through what we have now and trying to convince people and motivate people would be the best way to do it, would be through our faith.
I'd like to respond to this.
Let's have it up there in the, you want to speak to the chart?
Yeah. Well, yeah, as a respond to you, I agree with Dan. What he was saying, and that it's time, and that these things are at a point where they're big enough to where we need a confessing movement, like you say, but I'm just really curious as to what that would mean, and I'd like to hear at some point what would a confessing movement look like? What are some of the key elements of that for today? What would that include? You know, do we have one already just because of communities like Jax and others, like Holden Village? I mean, is this
That's a good question.
Part of that already?
Barbara wants to respond to Chuck here, and then I would like to have us address your question of whether there is such a confessing movement underway. What does it look like? If it isn't already present, what ought it to look like if people do think it's a kind of Kairos moment for the society and indeed for the world?
Well, I think I appreciate what you said. I want to say that because I think that helped me realize just now that part of maybe why I'm so reluctant to take the radical kind of apocalyptic stance of saying now is the confessing moment, the Kairos moment, we've got to be a confessing movement, is that we already have a couple groups doing that. The Roman Catholic bishops now have taken that kind of stance on one issue that they see as the most crucial issue in the world today, and they've defined that as abortion. And I don't agree with that. Richard John Newhouse from the St. Olaf Conference would say the same thing, that that's the status confessionis for issue for the church today. I don't agree with him. So I guess it's when I hear that kind of sort of absolutist position taken on an issue where I agree more with you, and I don't know what your position on abortion is, but I'm very much in the pro-choice camp, and so if I have groups of Christians like the Roman Catholic bishops saying to me, this is status confessionis, this is the issue that is going to divide, that is the watershed issue, and it's not the same one that I agree with, moreover, I have a position that they've already said is anathema to the gospel, then it makes me think, it makes me really nervous about Kairos times, confessing movements, and that whole kind of absolutism. I don't know what to say about the population issue. I can certainly say that I, as an American, consume about the same as 40 people in most other countries, or something like that. And so, it's very complex. But I don't know what to do when there's a big segment of the church defining abortion as the status confessionis issue. Not to get us off the track on that one, but that I think is probably why I'm kind of nervous about the whole idea.
Yeah, that makes me very nervous too.
There were some numbers recently that said that we could support about 1.5 billion people in this world eating like we eat, meat and so on like that. If we didn't, we could support like 6 billion people in the world.
And we're getting close.
And we're very close to that right now. And the projections which we blindly look at, which are conservative estimates, not the most pessimistic estimates, are like 9 or 10 billion people in 30, 40 years.
Yeah, middle of the next century, probably 8 to 10 billion.
If I could just say one sentence in relation to that, I think I wrote a book in 1979 on hunger that had a couple of chapters that dealt with population, and I said at that time, and I would say right now, that population is an enormously important problem, but that there is no evidence that you can resolve that problem in the midst of the social inequalities that create conditions in which families are making logical choices to have lots and lots of kids based on the economic situations that they're in. And so for me, the population isn't the fundamental one. It gets back to the economic injustice of which population is a symptom that can, if not dealt with, is going to overwhelm us. But I think it's important to make that link back to the economic justice issues.
I agree with that.
Can we go to this question? Is yours in response to that, or is it part of this? Pardon?
Just a comment.
Comment.
I just was thinking, it's real hard for me to listen to all this. I feel like when your heart says that something is right, when you think it through and you look at it and you believe it to be true, it's really hard to have the institutional church say, we're really not sure if that has anything to do with Christianity, with confessing Christianity. It gets so frustrating that, you know, for a lot of us, it ends up meaning that, I mean, we're out of here. You know, this is just, you know, no more.
And that, I think that gets back to your question, because I think if it happens, we're going to have to make it happen in local communities.
The piece of that is that at the same time, you see the church's complicity in very oppression that, you know, that you're trying to pull away from. And so it's not only saying, well, we're not really sure whether these folks over here are oppressed enough, but while sitting there thinking about it, the church as an institution is continuing to be an active oppressor. And to just simply reflect the sociology of a society that's, you know, that's moved by wealth and power, where, you know, which will always cut out the powerless. Is it a Kairos moment for the world? I doubt it. I really doubt it if the world cares.
But for the church?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I feel like I think maybe it's a personal Kairos moment for a lot of people, you know, to have to say, not I will not break bread with you, but you appear to not wish to acknowledge breaking bread with me, acknowledge who I am. So, hey, you know, I'm not going to go to that table anymore.
I doubt it would be the same, but one of the things, my understanding, that happened in South Africa as a result of this position that said it apartheid is incompatible with Christian faith, and really drawing a line, is that lots and lots and lots of people who checked out, checked back in.
And if table fellowship, I need to make the qualification that, I mean, I'm willing to share communion with anyone who confesses Jesus Christ. I hope that by table fellowship we don't really mean institutions that pay our salaries. But if we're really talking about communion, I'm willing to commune with anyone. That's not the question for me. The question for me is, can I organize faith community, can I be a part of an organized faith community which calls me to accountability, which supports me in my understanding of the gospel, and it has and can move together to in fulfilling our sense of call? Or do I need to spend all of that time and energy fighting within my traditional community in order to, let's say, pass resolutions? I mean, it really becomes a question of a community in which the faith is vital and both supports me in my ministry and calls me up to accountability to it. To be that yeast in society instead of just the yeast in my church.
Mm-hmm. I want to take up the question here of whether there is a confessing movement already underway. Sojourner magazine argues that there is a second reformation afoot that cuts across denominational lines, that is understood better by looking at kind of local ecumenism and people finding one another there than understanding Reformation in terms of any kind of denominational affiliation. Do you see evidence of confessing movement around a set of issues and concerns that face the whole society, and in some of them dimensions like population, environment, face the whole world? Maybe there's lots more response going on than we give credit for here.
Yeah, I'm just curious, you know, how widespread it is. Could we, in different people here in their home churches, could, you know, ask something like, have you talked about Central America in adult forums? Or is there a social justice group that is putting out literature on it? I talk about this stuff to my father, and he just sits there and smiles and nods his head, and, you know, it's like they're not doing it at his church. I'm just real curious, you know, how if it is a confessing movement, you know, who's in it? Confessional people.
Yes.
I think that people need to be made aware, because I'm fairly new to all of this, but I've really had my eyes open, and I think in our local community, which is very small, and in our local church, I don't think there's really anything. We haven't talked about it. I mean, this is the first that I've really been made aware of the importance and the magnitude of the whole situation, and I think it's really important. I mean, it made a definite call or said something to me that I need to go back and educate and talk to more people. And I think education is really going to be the key here to get the word out. In our community, we celebrated Earth Day. Well, that was, you know, all the media and everything got involved, and all the schools, all the kids. And that really put a lot of people aware about the ecological issues. But what can we do? I mean, we need to do something to make people aware, and I know there's a lot of apathy out there, so it'll be a call to each of us consciously. I think if we can just reach a few people and start something.
It looks like the seeds are there, or but it's scattered, you know, and there's just nothing that's really more like coagulated, I guess, is brought everything together.
Well, some are falling on rocky ground, too.
Yeah, and then they spend a lot of time, you know, within their own denominations, you know, dealing with what, like, the Lutherans are dealing with. They talk about the single ugly, you know, spending time doing that instead of, you know, what she's talking about, getting the word out, you know, and educating. So it falters, I think, because of that, fighting other battles and stuff, yeah.
Like to say, I have been kind of part of at least some of the initial conversations over the last year and a half about this with a broad range of people, including Sojourners and FOR and lots of people around the country. And something is brewing. Mm-hmm. You know, Newhouse would call it the demonic, probably, and I would call it the spirit. But something is brewing, and it's slow. And it's hard to read, and you don't know if it's going to get cut off. But I think I know of two or three very, very critical meetings, different constituencies gathering along diverse racial lines that are beginning to form. Some of that is taking place around the issue. It's being shaped in terms of Kairos 1992. And what I would say to people is, if anybody who would like to get something from me that would give you a way of being informed about at least the stuff that I'm connected to as it emerges, what I would ask you to do, maybe what I'll do is I'll put a sheet of paper in the resource room here, and you can just very legibly put your name and address on there. And if you can find me sometime, if you can give me 50 cents or something like that, I'll get something to you this summer that will give you a way of keeping in touch with this bubbling that's happening.
I'm wondering why you think you can solve all the problems of the world. I haven't heard the word hope mentioned, and that is probably the key problem for the success of and the happiness of any one individual. And there probably is more hope in the world now, individually, for more people than there has been in my lifetime.
Hmm. Yeah. We're running up against the 9:30 closing hour here. You might want to respond to that. I see three hands, Barbara, Mark, and Jan. Let's take them in that order.
Well, I was just going to say, Jan, isn't it even more specific that the 1992 is a watershed in terms of the Kairos time, because it's a question of how is our country going to celebrate Christopher Columbus? It's the 500th anniversary of that event. Is it with some sort of celebration? Is it repentance? Is it grieving and a new vision, or what? And I think in our congregations we can already start working towards that that date. As sort of, what does this mean? What does this year mean for our country? What does it mean for us as communities of faith? That
that's
it is
taking shape. I mean, that's what's beginning to be.
Yeah, and it is a Kairos. So was last year. I mean, but 1992 is really a Kairos.
Well, the other thing about 1992 that our brothers and sisters from the two-thirds world are saying is that, you know, not only do they see 500 years of colonialism and they're in really bad shape, but they see 1992 and the unification of Europe as the beginning of the new colonization. And I think they're absolutely right. And I think we need to take that seriously. 1992 is, again, a time to call attention to that.
Mark?
On the environmental scene, there's something called Global Forum, which is a organization of parliamentarians and world leaders and religious leaders.
Right.
And they met, were you there, the one in Moscow?
No, I remember, but I wasn't there.
It's an organization, as I say, of parliamentarians, world leaders, and religious leaders that are trying to think about the environmental crisis on a global scale. And these are the people that actually make the decisions in many of the countries. And they are meeting. And various decisions have been made, and some of them have actually been implemented in a number of countries. So it's not as if, that's a movement that involves religion and world leadership in which changes are being taken. So that's at least the beginning.
Just a quick note on that. Global Forum, the meeting, and there was a week-long meeting in Oxford, among other things that happened at Oxford, was a call on the part of the scientists to the religious community to address the problems of the environment. In Oxford was an initial meeting, and it was a worldwide meeting. The first of the national meetings of Global Forum took place in Moscow. Among other people, Gorbachev addressed the group. It was sponsored by the Politburo of the Communist Party, which may or may not last long, the Soviet Academy of Science, and the Russian Orthodox Church. Those were the sponsors of that event. Now, we're talking about regional meetings in the United States, which puts actually the Kairos thing in a different sort of framework. It isn't their grassroots movement. It's an appeal to leadership in various sectors to come together.